Ryan Asdor is the owner of the Superhuman Lab. Ryan founded Superhuman Lab in 2014 after moving back to Iowa from Atlanta, Georgia. While in Atlanta, Ryan worked at a premier sports therapy clinic working alongside some of the most sought-after docs, trainers, and therapists, which granted him the opportunity to work with athletes in the NFL, the NBA, the NHL, MLB, the PGA, and track and field. Ryan is my guest today. What's up, everybody? My name is John Campioni, and this is the Rock Tape Podcast.
I'm here with Ryan. Ryan, what's up, my friend? How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm holding up under quarantine, so things are well.
Yeah, this is like the first quarantine edition of the Rock Tape Podcast, so it'll be kind of fun to see where we go from this and the conversations that we have. So
I know it's been kind of nice because it's opened my schedule up to do stuff like this. Usually I'd be at work right now, but now it's like for the next week I don't have anything to do.
It's funny, I keep seeing this, and this is just because of I'm kind of a cynic and a pessimist in certain instances, but I see people like, well, the silver lining is I can get a lot of stuff done. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Excuse me, over here with two small children that never sit still. Yeah, how's your projects coming, people?
You know, my wife works in tech, so she'll be working still. So next week, it'll be just me and the kids. And I told them, I said, if you think you're playing Fortnite all day, you're tripping. said, we're going to have a schedule, son and daughter. She's excited. He's not.
You know what? It's funny too, because I was saying to my wife, it's like, you know, what's really kind of silly and lets me kind of have some humor in all this. So many people, that's all they want to do. It's like, oh, I just want to sit in my house all weekend and binge watch something on Netflix. And now we're told we have to do that. And they're like, no, I need to go out. It's crazy.
It's so true. It's like you can never make anybody fully happy. It's like, what do you think you're going to do?
Yeah. Well, let's get into it, man. Let's talk about you, Ryan. Right. You are in Urbandale, Iowa, just outside Des Moines. I've been there a couple times. You've hosted us for some Rock Tape events too. Tell us a little bit about, you know, where you're from, where you came up, where'd you go to school, and your profession and how you got into that. Sure.
So I took kind of a very non-linear path in what I do. Long story short, I knew when I got out of high school I wanted to work with my hands, you know, and I pinged around I love motorcycles, right? So I thought motorcycle mechanic, and I realized I'm not mechanically inclined. And then actually woodworking, you know, I thought I was going to be this woodworking artist, and I realized I'm not mathematically inclined, and apparently woodworking is a lot of math. So I knew I wanted to work my hands, and then I knew I wanted to help people. And so a friend of mine, the real genesis of my journey is a friend of mine is a strength conditioning coach, Chad Pearson, still one of my best friends today. And I went to Iowa City to just hang out. You know, I was probably 19, 20, purely there to party. And I saw what he was doing with athletes, and there's something that struck me that said, I need to do this. Mm-hmm. And so long story short, somebody said, I'm thinking of working with my hands, maybe a physical therapist. And somebody told me, you do not want to be a physical therapist. And I said, why? And they said, you personality-wise will not enjoy being told what to do, having to keep the strict notes for insurance, yada, yada. And so I said, what do I do? And somebody said, you need to go to massage school. And I said, definitely not. The idea of being a massage therapist, I'm just picturing myself at being like 40 years old someday, being a massage therapist. It just seemed ridiculous. But somebody said, you need to meet this guy, Brian Glossbach. So long story short, Brian Glossbach was an engineer. And at 37 years old, he quits and goes to massage therapy school. And he gets his degree in like biomechanics or something like that. And so I met him. And at the time, he was working with all these well-known athletes, you know. So this was like when T.O. was really big. Mm-hmm. And I met him, and what he struck up in me, I said, that's what I'm doing. So long story short, went to massage school, moved down to Atlanta to basically under his tutelage, and the rest is history from there. And then once we had children, once my son was born, we said, it's time to go back home. And so we moved back to Des Moines. And my wife's only child, so she was really missing home. And, you know, so we moved back.
And you're from Des Moines originally, that same area that you live in right now, right?
Yep, I'm from the same area. Yep, small farm town in Iowa is where I grew up, a town of 400 people. Some people tell me small town. I go, how small? Because I can, you know, it's funny, the high school I went to, the population like quadrupled when school's in, because the high school was in our town. Yeah. And then when they left, it like simmered back.
It's so funny you say that, because I was in Fargo this past weekend as we record this. And I said, it's my second time that I was up there. And I was like, oh, I really like it up here. You know, it's nice to come to kind of a small town. And what I meant was relative to where I live, you know, outside of Chicago. And someone just started laughing. I'm like, what? They're like, I live in a town of like 200 people. I'm like, okay, sorry.
Fargo's a wild town, isn't it?
It's cool. I like it a lot. Fargo, yeah. Moorhead, really, really cool area, you know, just, you know, grassroots kind of place. So when you came back into Des Moines, you know, we have our massage therapy degree, you've been practicing, you've been under the tutelage of a mentor. What did you do? How did you decide, like, I want to open up my own place? Were you working for some people, or did you go right into getting into your own business?
I went right into it. You know, this is the biggest game changer for me, is understanding you could be extremely talented at your craft as a practitioner. That is not the same thing as business. And business, man, I got kicked hard in the beginning, like really kicked, because I wasn't running a business like a business. I was running a business like a passionate therapist. And so that's where I really, you know, and also I was really into yoga when I was younger. And what I tried to do is mesh in, like, I knew that movement needed to be a part of the piece. Real, you know, so I tried dosing in yoga because I did it. And then I've realized for years, it was not the thing. And so I had to really figure out, A, as a practitioner, how do I rehab people properly? And then B, how to run a business. And so that's where I've gotten really into like the functional range system stuff, because it just fits for my, again, for my personality and give me the structure, it fits well. But I'm a big fan, you know, discipline equals freedom, right? So having something that can systemize something for me, there's a lot of freedom within it, you know? And so that's helped with that. And then honestly, for business, I just had a really good friend. He runs businesses. He's like the only real entrepreneur. You know, entrepreneur means you don't have a job. It doesn't mean you're successful. And so he was the only one who was successful at entrepreneurship. And he just was like, hey man, hang in there. Like, just hang in there. Don't get upset about the failures. Just look at that as a flag to what needs fixed, but you can't get emotional about it. And that was a game changer for me, just having that friendship.
That's a really great advice, actually. As much as we laugh at it, the entrepreneur, that's a good point. Like, there's so many people are like, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. Oh my gosh, tell me about your business. Well, I don't have one just yet. You know, so you said something that has always been true to me the moment I got out of school myself, is just practicing like a passionate individual is not the same as running a business. And you know, I teach chiropractic students, and a lot of them I can tell kind of have a business mind for it and almost have more of a practitioner mind. And, you know, that is a really interesting line to toe, because while, like, I can speak for chiropractors, we have business classes. It's one of those things where you don't really know what you're doing until you get in the thick of it and you start to have some failures. So when starting up your practice, did you have any particular stories of note where you really learned a good lesson, but maybe not the best way to learn a lesson?
Yeah, I would say up until real recent, just going, okay, getting the financials in order is number one, and making the best financial decisions day by day, you know, and that's been the biggest thing. Just going, okay, where are we at? Okay, if we make $80,000, I want you to pay your overhead. You made 25, you know, once you got everything out the door, it's like, so we need to look at, profit needs to be a part of the equation. And the problem I see, and I went through, is you can have a big heart, but if you aren't here in 3 years because your business fails, you stop serving people possibly. And so you need to keep that in mind, that to serve people the best, you need to be not selfish, but you need to be aware of profitability. If you can't, I mean, profit is, it's the part of the equation that makes it sustainable, you know? And so when I started looking at that, and honestly, I have people who are outside of our industry who are just better at business than me. Sure. And hearing how they do stuff, and just and that's really been big. You know, there's a book, Profit First. Have you heard of it?
I thought it was registering with me. I don't remember now.
It's a must read because it basically says this: we're going to force you to put pen to paper here, and we're going to force you to think about profit within the business, because it's not a it can wait equation, especially if you're a solopreneur where it's just you or you plus one. And that's been a real game changer of immediately in the month delineate my money to certain pots to make sure I'm making the next best step. Because the hard part is you try to do so much at one time, and what I see with that is you probably actually need to do less. Like you need to take those five focal points and narrow them down to one or two, and then really hammer those one or two a lot. You know, one thing for me, I'm starting to keep the time from 9 to 6 is sacred time. I don't take meetings. We don't do coffee. It has to be really, the only harsh I make is I work with some students, and they're the only thing that I allowed in that time frame. Otherwise, if you want to do coffee, if you want to catch up, if you want to pitch me on something, it's going to have to be between and after that time. So I block off that time to sacred time just for clients, because without that, if you don't run your schedule, somebody will. And a lot of people will eat up a lot of your time if you let it happen.
I've seen stuff like that just with, managing your own personal life. You know, even outside of business, you know, I'm a big fan of Jim Quick and talking about productivity and talking about just organizing your life. And I wouldn't say so much discipline, but just, being able to, work smarter rather than harder. And it's a really important thing. And I think for practitioners, whether it's massage therapist, chiropractor, PT, is you really do have to schedule and regiment your day. Because when we start to veer out of these norms, that's where everybody starts to fall into, now I have all this stuff on my plate and I haven't gotten anything done. And that's just the worst feeling in the world for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Is like, I had so much to do and then I thought I was working and then I realized I didn't really even get anything done. So tell us a bit about your current practice, which I have to say is one of my favorite names for a place ever. Tell us about your practice.
Yeah. So in 2014, opened up Superhuman Lab. And, I made the name because it needed to be a reminder to me, to tell me to always push, but also lab implies experimentation. And I didn't want to get so in the weeds that I stopped experimenting and being curious. Learning's a real, it's probably why you and I get along so well. Learning's a really big part of the equation for me. I love, love learning. And so if I'm not taking a course, reading a book, having mentorship, then I'm not happy. So I always wanted to remind myself to put that first. So that's how we opened up in Superhuman Lab. And then from there, it's just been, trying to figure out how to meld movement and soft tissue work together. Yeah. And I've tried it many ways and I've been successful in some and less than others. And then from there, I was really trying to figure out, I said, I know that systemizing stuff could be helpful for me because while I don't like structure, I do thrive under structure. I like spontaneity, but I need some structure. I'm just in personality. Otherwise, I'm like a kitten on cocaine. I just go from the next best thing to the next best thing and, playing with one thing and then saying another. So that's where my buddy Matt, who is like, hey, we should check out this functional range stuff. And I'd been hip to it because another friend of mine, I was doing some work with a basketball player in Houston, and he said, hey, do you know Dr. Andreo Spina? I said, no, I haven't heard of this guy. And then, so that was my first ping of it. And then I went to actually the Ido Portal course in Dallas, and I met this dude, Hunter, and he was an instructor, and he was telling me about it. I thought, interesting, movement and soft tissue work. Somebody's already kind of thinking along the lines that I think. And so I started just really diving into it. And what's cool about it is, I invest in people. I don't invest in just things. And so what's really been cool is just every course I take, I learn there's somebody there who's probably taken the course and they changed my life. You know, and that's what's interesting. When I first took this course, this guy put his bag down next to me. He said, I'm Josh. I said, hey, I'm Ryan. He said, where are you from? Georgia. I said, oh, cool. I used to live in Georgia. What part? He's like, oh, it's probably a town you haven't heard of. Long story short, he works for the company that I left. Like, in this, I mean, who would have thought we'd become great friends? And, you know, we're constantly reviewing information together and stuff. So it's been really neat.
That's really cool. And you, just a really good point is that's how great education is. It brings a lot of people together. You know, I say it in our courses all the time is I learn as much from the participants as they learn from me being the instructor too. So you are doing functional range conditioning, for anybody unfamiliar with Dr. Spina's stuff, FRC. I feel bad and Joe Lavaca is going to yell at me, but FRC versus kin stretch, what's the difference?
Sure. Kin stretch is just to systemize it for a group setting. So let's say you work in like a lot of yoga teachers will transition into it. Where I like it is when you have a team of people. So if I have 50 people, how do I get them to all work within a range that is appropriate for them? That's the thing. And that's why I really like it. Cause here's the thing about yoga. So when I was teaching yoga, I had to tell some of them would be my clients. I had to tell them, hey, you shouldn't come to class. And they go, why? I go, because based on your condition, there's like three or four things I can think of that aren't appropriate. Right. Mm-hmm. So like if you have somebody with low back pain, somebody may be provoked by flexion. Another person might be provoked by extension. And so that was a real bummer to me. And that's, you know, I like yoga personally, but as far as rehabbing people, if you have 10 people, it's either, you know, there's three of them it's great for, three of them it provokes something, and then the other participants fall into some other zone. And so that's where just having something systemized, it goes, let's think about if we work on hip stuff, let's all work within a safe yet beneficial range. And so FRC is very one-on-one, kin stretch is group orientated. That's the only difference.
Very cool. Very cool. So there's a huge component of mobility in the movement within that system. What are the things you're using to incorporate that mixture of, as you said, mobility, movement with soft tissue? Obviously, being a massage therapist, soft tissue is something you have expertise in. So are there any particular techniques you're a fan of or things you've developed on your own and kind of what's your style?
Sure. If I just sum it up, my goal is to always be teaching people about themselves. With new science coming out, with new technology coming out, I feel like it's an emergence where we're having to reevaluate what is actually happening. You know, I think it's people should need to reserve the right to pause and process for a second. When I first started, ART stuff was really popping, and the idea of stripping tissue and changing tissue. And then now we're in this transitional period of, wow, it may not be, you know, maybe it doesn't change tissue as much as we thought. So what the hell am I doing? And that's where I just go to. I'm always teaching people about them. You know, I had this realization that when I put my hand, the minute I touch something, focus goes to where I'm touching, right? So touch is teaching. And when we do that, then what I think seems to happen more is things are changing rapidly, but it's really maybe more neurological based. So they're changing almost like if I say, hey, make a fist. And then I say, relax your fist. And you go, oh, wow, I didn't realize I was kind of at like a resting tension within that grip. Yeah. I just do that throughout the body. Yeah. I keep it simple. I do that throughout the body. And I try to give them something they didn't have before. And sometimes it's just, I tell people, you're going to be the one who solves this problem, because I have other shit to do. Like I can't, you know what I mean? So once I point things out to you, you're going to take it home and you're going to test it out and you're going to come up with new information next time I see you. Yeah. And that's the real period is really, eventually my goal is to get people as self-reliant as possible because I just physically may not be there for you all the time because I'm one person. Yeah. And so that's been really empowering people like that. That's been really fun.
You know, that's why I think you and I get along so much is we're so like-minded with that. And it frustrates me when someone doesn't necessarily understand it or even fights against it, especially, but that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get someone to be self-reliant. So again, from a business perspective, it's not the best business plan to get someone better as fast as possible, but my goodness, is that a great marketing plan as well too, is you got someone better in a couple sessions, they're going to tell all their friends about it as well too. Do you have a particular clientele? Do you specialize in particular individuals? You kind of always seem to have a very well-rounded practice and obviously can see a number of different people, but do you have any particular realms that you kind of stick in, maybe by chance or by on purpose?
Yep. So through my mentorship, Brian was working on a lot of high-end athletes. And so that just became my niche just because he was doing it, I was doing it. Sports injury is really my passion. What I've realized through the years, it comes to a mind, like, here's what I don't want to work on. I don't want to work on chronic pain patients because I'm not a very patient person. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of patience. And you got to put your ego aside because they're not going to get, like, I like things to resolve. Yeah. Like, if you have a rotator cuff issue, I like it when it resolves and we move on. I don't mm-hmm. like something that the win is, you know, it's better today. And we're always going to be constantly doing something because maybe there's something, I don't know, somebody might have something genetically wrong with them, all sorts of issues. So chronic pain stuff is what I definitely don't do. Mm-hmm. And then, sports injury would probably be the thing. But what I'm finding out is, like, as I get older, is it's really about a mindset. So there's a book that I absolutely love called This Is Marketing by Seth Godin. And his thing is make something extraordinary for a very particular person. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, you have to be willing to say this though, I made this just for you. You also have to be willing to say this, I'm sorry, but I did not make it for you. Right. And so personally, I tell people, if you come with a work ethic, and we're going to be, it's going to be very active and we're going to co-pilot this together, we're going to get along just fine. I don't care if you can be a stay at home mom, you can be a construction worker, I don't care, but you have to come with those components. If not, we won't mesh well probably. And so I try not to waste people's time and money. And if they're not going to mesh well, I just make sure I put them in the hands of somebody who will, you know, that's a great thing. Right. Like I love working with other practitioners. And I'm finding generationally, I think people are more and more like that. I don't, mm-hmm. The old school way of thought of like people kind of hoard information and worry about themselves only. I don't really see that happening anymore. Like, I just don't. I love working with other therapists. It's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's so profound. And I think it's a great way to get into, tapping into your experience and your expertise. Let's stick with, massage therapists, young massage sure. therapists who want to get out on their own. What are some of the things that you could say to them, some of the advice that you might have on top of all the other advice you've already given us?
I think in massage therapy, if you look at it more like, I think the one thing that we've lost is mentorship. So the idea of like, if you look at chefs, there's a lot of crafts where mentorship is very important. My buddy owns piercing studios. And it's very, and tattoo shops and stuff, those are very like, you learn from somebody. That's dying down. And I'm telling you, that saved straight up 10 years of pain for me. 10 years. Because, you have to have the right mentorship groove. Like the one thing I was very lucky with Brian is he would never give me the answer, but he also would never give me too many constraints. I didn't feel like I had to do it just like him. It was really well-rounded because mentorship can also be a real drag. Like if you have somebody who it's not a good mesh, you're going to hate it, but it can save you some time. It can save you a lot of time and heartache. So I think find mentorship. And if you find mentorship, you need to be asking what you can do for them versus what they can do for you. One of my best things that got me working with pro athletes extremely quick in my career was I would just make sure I made my bosses look good. Like, what do you need? How can I help you? And guess what they did? They looked, and people probably were a little upset where I work because why does this new kid from Iowa get all these traveling opportunities? We're making some pretty good coin too. And mm-hmm. they didn't get it and they've been there for 5 years. Well, I just outworked them. That Iowa work ethic, man, it goes far. So, really being patient and make somebody else rich that you want to respect and think about their time. And that's all I did.
I like that a lot. And I totally agree with you again, just the older school mentality of like, well, I got to take care of myself and I got to do everything. And almost like you said, hoard the information and not kind of pass it on to the next generation, but also just the idea of mentorship. You're absolutely right. And, I got tattoos. I see this all the time. there is such a huge component of mentorship when it comes to being a tattoo artist. And where is that in healthcare now? You know, I had some mentors. I had people who I thought were mentors, but then you get into the idea of like they could be using you just to kind of further their own practice and business. Right. Even outside of what you were saying is we should, as mentees, be helping someone do that as well too. You also have to look at the fact that don't let anybody take advantage of you as their mentee and working for them, because that's not the relationship you really want. Would you agree?
Absolutely. You have to find the right mesh. And if it doesn't feel right in your gut, just run. Like I really believe that. If it does not feel, there's something that makes you in your gut and you just kind of sits somewhere in your body that you're like, it's not for you. And I'm not saying they're a bad person. It may not just be a good fit. You know, I've had some relationships where somebody has, they really actually want to help me. They really do.
Yeah.
And we just wouldn't be a good fit. And I had to recognize that and call it what it was. And that's happened too, right? Like I've had people where things didn't work out, you know, where they want for you, but they, what they want for you is what you don't want. You know, I've had that and I just had to go, it's not the right fit.
Yeah.
And, that's it. That happens. But you know, even, I'm trying to think, I'll tell you another mentor I have that's really an interesting one is Dr. Ed Thomas, the Indian Club.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's probably the like biggest historian for physical culture, but he is, me and my friend Corey always joke that like he just has no financial motivations. So we're always just trying to be like, don't fire us as mentees, please. Like, cause if he will too, man, he's hardcore dude. He'll let you know what he thinks. But he's been, I don't know why I brought that up, but he's been awesome. I just want to shine a little credit his way and some luck I've had because my friend's a cop. And so he's huge into physical culture, huge into it. And he asked Ed if I could come with. He's like, you should meet my friend Ryan. And he said, no. He goes, no. And then, but then he showed some of the stuff I was doing. And I think he thought, oh, this is a kid who's got some passion. Kid, I'm 35. Here's a guy who's got some passion for the culture. Physical culture. And then that's been awesome. Like learning, think about this. I'm learning Indian clubs from a guy who, when he learned it, when he was 8 years old, like let's do the math. His mentors, right, were born in the late 1800s.
Yeah.
They taught him and he's teaching me. It's like that like is wild to me when I think about the lineage of learning I'm getting from that. It's so cool.
Well, you know, that's actually could be an interesting transition into kind of talking about your clientele a little bit more. And, you know, you mentioned Ed Thomas, and Ed, for anybody who doesn't know, Ed Thomas is a, essentially he's a, like a physical education historian, if you will. And he specializes a lot in club swinging, Indian club education. And really before 1920, gym classes and physical culture was much different than what it is now. So correct me if I'm wrong on this, Ryan, but you saw more in gymnasiums, climbing, club swinging, calisthenics, stuff like that. So when you say Dr. Thomas's mentors born in the late 1800s, they were used to swinging clubs, doing calisthenics, doing rope climbing, stuff like that, stuff that you just don't see anywhere there. So this shift in culture, it has been pretty dramatic and it just kind of keeps building and building. I think we're seeing smaller shifts, but there is a huge shift that kind of relates back to our clientele and explaining to them, like, you know, this is what I expect from you as a client, but these are the things that I really need to for you to understand as a client as well too.
Yeah, it really is important to dive back in history and look where we've been, because things are cyclical, you know, and that's what I'm realizing is all the stuff coming, you know. You know, a big component of FRS is joint rotations, right? Another word, but so it's a articular focused piece of it. Well, you know what's funny? Indian clubs is known as circular weight training. And what's the whole emphasis? Joint circle. Do rotations with your joints. And so when I look at that back, when you look at history, things are so cyclical, it kind of can tell you where we're at in a timeline. And that's, you're right, like, what's interesting, and Ed says it's so good, he says, you know, we took all the equipment, we kicked it out into the playground, right? That's what a playground is. We kicked it out there and we made a shrine to basketball, right? So all that, the whole gymnasium was made to host equipment for, you know, climbing and swinging, all sorts of stuff. And now it is, it's it's a shrine to basketball. And, you know, it's funny. Yeah. He took me to this museum in Davenport. So Davenport's unique because it has a very rich German population. Mm-hmm. And so all that system is called the Turnervine system or Turner system. And so like in Milwaukee, you'll see Turner Hall, right? These were gymnasiums. These were gatherings of a population of immigrants would come together and they would talk politics. They would swing clubs because what happened was historically is a bunch of Germans migrated to near the river and they thought, okay, we're getting our asses kicked over here in Germany. Let's train physically and go back and kick some ass. And mm-hmm. they didn't. They ended up staying. But the actual, it was very purposeful training. I think that's the emphasis is purposeful training. Where is that? And where is it in community? And yeah. that's where we got to think about it. You know, it's like CrossFit's trying to do it. They're at least bringing back some of the old equipment, rings, kettlebells, right? So they have the material, but what lacks is the method. So Indian clubs is a material, the method, that's where I'm interested in. And that's what we're kind of lacking in right now is we just don't have, you know, people are doing their best they can, but they just don't have the knowledge of how to use this. And if you don't use it, what happens? It gets abused and people can use these materials to beat themselves up. Right. You know, you can do an American kettlebell swing and tear your shoulders up if you have a shoulder issue. And so we gotta know this. I think getting people to recognize that is what interests me a lot right now.
Yeah, I had to cringe when you said, you know, I'm a kettlebell purist because I've done kettlebell sport. So yeah, the overhead swing is not my favorite. Not making fun of anybody. You can do it correctly, but it's just,
sure.
I don't want to get into it, but somebody who does kettlebell sport like me, my question is, where do you go from there? Because it's a lot about fluidity and smoothness.
Right.
You know, if I go up into the rack position, I can go overhead. If I go into a snatch, I can, you know, do that stuff. And I think that is actually a really good key to what you're talking about, especially with something like Indian clubs, is fluidity of motion. We're starting to get back into the idea of the sequencing of motion and looking at flow and not necessarily going, what are we working today? Shoulders. Okay, we're separating the shoulders from the rest of the body. Mm-hmm. And then what are we doing? We're pressing overhead. So we're only doing one thing with the shoulders. And you're taking a joint that is meant to do literally everything and you're isolating it down to be strong or functional in one particular plane of motion and particular movement pattern, which just may not fit in real life for that individual. I'm not getting into the idea that doesn't benefit some people and can be a good way to build strength. Stop yelling at your iPhone when you're listening to this. That's not what I'm saying. But the idea is getting back into the fluidity of movement and teaching people how to move like human beings, which goes back to why you have a place called Superhuman Lab, right?
Yep.
You can experiment a little bit more and you can make someone superhuman by having them just be humans again, right?
Well, that's exactly it, right? Like we've been so deformed because of the structure of school. Now I will say this, my kids have it way better than I did. Like they're starting to recognize we need these kids moving and not punish them for movement. And that's starting to become, I'm starting to see that come back in the schools. And so that's one thing. Ed was actually, you know, he worked military and then in the education system. And I'll tell you something. You want to hear something real crazy?
Yep.
This is going to be insane. I'm trying to think if I can say it. Let me think. I'm pretty sure I can say this. So the problem is when you allow kids to move, it works. Okay. And the schools don't always want that. And now why would they not want that? Because it takes away specialized money. If you have kids improving, you know, we change the desk structure. We change the sitting structure and that their test scores improve. Right? They're getting progress. It will defund areas of education because they like special needs money. You may not need as much money with improvement. Mm-hmm. And there are some people within the school systems who are manipulating things that are not serving people for the greater because it defunds when things get better, it defunds things. And I didn't believe it when I heard it, but it's when you look at it mathematically and when he showed me some stuff, it absolutely is hard to deny. That's interesting to me is going, wow, we need to do a better job within our schools. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think the younger generation started to pick up on that a little bit.
I don't know why. Too.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you one thing that it just really struck me that we were talking about. He says, there's three ways to use your body. When you're a kid, you use it like it's a toy. You don't care if you break it, right? You break it, you whatever, you know, that's eventually you use it like it's a tool. You know, like somebody who prepares for a war, they realize my body is a tool. You and I, our bodies are our tools, how we make our money and fund our families.
Yeah.
He goes, and then there's a third point where it's temple. You realize you're only getting one of these, and it's, and it becomes, there's a spiritual component to movement. Mm-hmm. And that is like, wow, to think about that is just so different. You know, we don't do Indian club swinging with reps and sets. You know, it's a mindset, it's a focus to it, right? Because we're starting to tap now into it being bigger than us. You know, that's cool.
And that's such a cool point too, because you know, we've talked about this and it's been implied throughout this conversation, but I love Indian clubs, you know, and I've been practicing a lot of really cool moves because, I mean, you being exposed to Ed Thomas, you know, you've seen a lot of the cool stuff out there, but trying to find different programs and moves and trying to see some of the older stuff where they're getting into really interesting fluid movement patterns, you know, like, and I'm sitting here just doing a single cast type of thing and going, wow, awesome. But I'm bored with it now. Now I'm trying things like snakes and stuff like that. What I'm getting at is that it's more fun to practice. I don't care how many reps I'm doing. I just want to practice and I just want to move and I want to accomplish that task. That's all I want to do. It's not like it's, tell me if you got into this too. Years ago, when I was a personal trainer, I got into the idea that like, I don't want clients that want to lose weight because I want someone who wants to function better and move better and live better. And guess what's going to also happen when you do that? You're going to lose weight. So for me, I start talking more about my practice. I start talking more about, I want to get better at this skill. Because guess what's also going to happen? I'm going to get better mobility. I'm going to feel better. You know, my neuro stuff, I'm going to talk about the brain and all that too. So like, I feel like the culture shift is back into that paradigm of, I want to get better at this skill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, you know, it's a reason why I'm starting to slowly remove the word athlete from my languaging because, you know, it's funny. I'm super athlete focused. And as I get older and my kids get older, it's more than about just an athlete. It works well because it develops a mindset for people. People go, I'm not an athlete. And I say, hey, listen, do you have a particular goal that you're striving for and you want to be excellent at? Perfect. You're an athlete. But if I end my career not helping a greater population of people, it's probably a failure. You know, if I make a lot of money, like athletes, here's the reality. We work with athletes, it pays really good bills. It just does. Like I work with professional athletes. They pay the most because they get the most attention. It's been great for my career, but at the end of the day, there's a population of people who are nothing. They are depressed. They hate themselves to degrees. And if I don't shape and do that, you know, parenting's really taught me a lot. If I don't change that environment here in Des Moines, I don't know what to do. You know, and like, one of my real goals is Des Moines was the mecca for physical culture because of the German population that we had here. And they brought in a lot of their systems over here. I want Des Moines to be a mecca again for physical culture, you know, and that's what I'm really driven by and help as many people as possible. You know, I have to expand beyond helping an athlete. I need to help a generation of people. And I see that in my kids. You know, my kids are my little lab rats. We experiment all the time. You know, I'm managing a 9-year-old who loves Fortnite. And I have to, you know, figure out how to let him do that. But also, you know, we exchange Fortnite time for pull-ups.
Oh, my God. That's brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Dude, my kids I'm going to brag. My kids are studs, like, for movement because we've always played fun games with them. All the time. We're always training. My daughter loves it. And they're crushing it physically. You know, it's funny though, my son's starting to fall behind though, because of age, you know, he's not moving as much. You can see the tissue deformation that's happening. So making sure that doesn't happen is like that's my biggest goal.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way with my kids too, is I have a 4-year-old, almost 5-year-old son who hasn't stopped moving since conception. And I get to number one, observe him and how a human being really can move. I'm going to emphasize can, not should, but can. And understanding, like, he he doesn't care about how he does it. He doesn't like, oh, sorry, Dad, my form was off when I went to climb. It's like no, he just does it. And that's where my practice is when I treat people and try to help people move, is like, I want you to get to the point to where you just move. You don't think about it. Mm-hmm. And you aren't so cautious about being able to do that too. And it's such a fascinating thing too. You know, we have that cliche about like squat like a toddler, and that's been, you know, fought over a ton because they're not as tall as adults and et cetera, et cetera. But I think we should be moving more like those children, not necessarily one particular movement, but just movement in general, which means fluid and strong. And mm-hmm. honestly, this is where I get in fault as a parent, without fear. Like, I'm the one who's scared more than my children too. But for some reason, I'm trying to force people to move better and they're scared. And I'm like, no, you can do that. But then it flips when it comes to my kids. So most of my patients aren't really hanging from the rafters though too. So I have to keep that in mind.
Well, you know what's, and that brings me to something. One thing I'm realizing with my adults, a problem we have is movement confidence. And so one thing I'm really big about is, while I may work in different systems, and I have a particular way I like to train people and work with them, I'm never going to bash somebody for doing it differently. You know, because if you're trying to get people moving, we're teammates. I'm not trying to create a divide. You know, I don't want to landlock myself because this is how I do it, and this is only the way. Man, if you're trying to get people moving, if, you know, the best benefit is if I can go, ooh, I think I can help them maybe uptick this, maybe make it a little better for them, then I'm going to try to do that. And that's where, you know, one thing I'm realizing, like, for instance, a big part of FRS is what they call CARS, controlled articular rotations, joint focused, articular focused. Some people it doesn't work with, and it's personality. They don't do it. And so I have to think of a creative way. You know, this is where it's like my kids, I have to create an obstacle, a game of it. I have to gamify it for some people to do it. You know, one thing I'm really intrigued by is people will go, well, if you don't do it, then you're non-compliant. It's like, no.
That's not the same thing.
Are they non-compliant, or are you non-malleable in your coaching? And so that's where I really have to be malleable in my coaching, because if the goal is the goal, I have to figure out how to get you there. And it doesn't work the same. You know, certain personalities are different. Certain people will not do it structured. I have to gamify it and change it up. And that's been really fun, is recognizing when you learn something, you love something, and when it doesn't work, going, oh, I need to be malleable right now and think about what's the whole thing. That's why I tell people, I think about principles first. Okay, I need his joints to start rotating better. What do I do? Sometimes I bust out an Indian club because it's funner. They like it, and it works more. You know, because what's the focus? Joint focused, okay, rotation focused, and give them in a zone that's not going to hurt them. Perfect. It's awesome.
I always have to hold myself back when I get into this, because I'm going to get myself in trouble if anybody brings it back to my bosses. But students, if you're listening, go back for about a minute and a half or whatever. Listen to that again. Students really need to understand this. And I think this is the biggest difference between being a student and getting into practice and understanding from experience. You have to be able to move away from a system. And Ryan, you said it perfectly, is that you use stuff that works for a good majority of people, but where your skill comes into play is when you have to move away or modify for that individual, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And that's the biggest thing that I notice with the expertise of a practitioner, whether it be a couple years or many more years after that, is being able to take the protocols and the systems that you learn, but then modify it for the individual, because that's where you are the most helpful for that person, is being able to make it fun or make it specific to that person, to that individual.
Yeah. And you know, another thing for practitioners I think is important that we could really hit on hard here is, if you said I'm team Rock Tape and I said I'm team FRS, we wouldn't have this conversation, right? Like, while we may have our preferences, it's really important to, like, hey, get outside of, like, like, don't landlock yourself from an education standpoint, because there's going to be something you're going to learn from somebody. So one thing I'm seeing right now that, like, I'm really do not want to be a part of is people getting really pretentious about certain things that they do, and then really kind of like downgrading what other people do. It's like, the problem with it is it's just not beneficial or helpful. If it was, I would do it. But it's just I don't understand what the win's going to be there. And so for me, I'm so interested in how people do things. Do I have my preference and bias? Absolutely. I'm human. But I got to open up and go, what can I learn from this? And man, like, it's been so cool. Like when you come to Des Moines and you and I get to catch up and have lunch and supper, I always learn something different for you. You know, you have some vestibular stuff that you do that's like, I don't know anything about. And so getting to learn from different people by staying open-minded and I think that's the biggest thing is we need to do a better job in our industry is to stop dividing stuff up into teams. I just don't think it's beneficial. You know what I mean?
Please let's stop making teams. We're all on the same team. It's all about getting people better and being good at what we do. I think this is, and this just comes from me as a teacher, is the most frustrating question I hear is, you know, it involves a certain amount of certain type of inflection, but when am I going to use this? I hear that a lot in seminars and classes and stuff like that. And again, I'm not ragging on anybody who's going to listen to this and tell them here like that. But what I would prefer to hear is, when could I use this? And I think that's something that we need to do to change the lexicon, is not when am I going to use this? It's when could I use this? Because what you're keeping in mind is it's a possibility. And, you know, we talk about the opening our toolboxes and filling our toolboxes and stuff like that. I have a lot of things that I've learned in the past that I haven't used in years. But if I need it, it's there.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, and that's where it's like, you know, and I'll change my way about stuff. Like, for instance, there is a certain technique, I guess you would say, that I use. And I thought it did one thing. And then as I figure out, it doesn't do what I initially thought it did. But it's still beneficial because it does something else.
Like an off-label use kind of thing?
Well, so I don't want to speak on it too harsh. Basically, how would you put it? What I thought it was doing was maybe some sort of tissue manipulation. What it was really doing was it was adding a higher dose of stress. So think of like deeper aggressive work.
Okay.
I thought it was changing more tissue. And then as I get older, I realized it's not changing the tissue, but what it does do is it's almost like exposure therapy.
Okay.
Like I think that's something, you know what I mean? So I upregulate stressors within the body and then manipulate things around it to try to get a result. And that's kind of been fun too. So
that's really
basically
cool.
Just while things don't do as the original intent, they're still beneficial. I think that's important to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that's one thing I think people miss on. They go, oh, it doesn't do this. And they just throw it away. It's like, well, hang on. It may not do its initial purpose, but that doesn't mean it's not beneficial. You got to find out what's the rub.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, man, Ryan, you and I always have great conversations. I'm glad we're recording one this time. go ahead.
I always like when you come to Des Moines, because I think you and I are also good foodies too. So I can kind of. Well, nothing's a better feeling when somebody comes to your city to go like, oh, we gotta hit this spot up. That's a good feeling to do. So when you come back, I've been saving some spots.
Well, I don't want to disappoint you. As we record this, it's Thursday, March 19th. I was scheduled to teach in Urbandale April 4th and 5th. But as of right now, I'm not even sure if that's going to happen because of the situation at hand. So I was really looking forward to getting back in that area too, because number one, it's a drivable trip. So I don't have to fly or anything like that, but I just love coming to that area, coming to see you, man.
Yeah, I'll tell you the two foods I think are interesting in Des Moines is people don't realize this, we have a huge Thai population. So our Thai food's off the chain. Yeah. And Bosnian. Have you had Bosnian food?
No. What makes Bosnian food unique?
Meat. It's just meat on meat. Lots of meat, lots of bread. It's going to be 9,000 calories. It's good though. It's weird. It's a weird, it's not like Iowa's very Americana food, steak, potatoes. It's like that. It's very hearty, but it's different. It's really good.
I married into a Czech family. So, you know, I'm very familiar to Bavarian food. So is it similar to like Bavarian German style, Czech Austrian food?
A little bit. Yeah. Okay. A little bit. Lots of bread. Lots of meat.
So I will love it, but I probably can't eat a lot of it since I have some food sensitivities.
Oh yeah, for sure. Then we'll do Thai food. Thai food's pretty safe by then.
Well, Ryan, you know, one thing I admire about you as well, too, is you are a very avid reader. So can you give us some reading suggestions? Why don't you give us, it doesn't have to be your favorite, but how about you give us a business book that you feel helped you? And how about just a general, you know, maybe something regarding more practice book that you like?
Okay. This is probably my favorite question. I'm going to give you two business books. One, Essentialism. Absolutely key. Number two, I got to put Seth Godin's This Is Marketing. Those two combined pair great. For industry stuff, I would say, I'll tell you a book I really enjoy is, let me think here. Oh, The Body Keeps the Score. That's it.
Ooh, I like that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you read it?
Yes, I have.
I would say this, it needs to also go with the dose of if you're going through, or if you're dealing with trauma, may not be the read. So I'm really careful with who I read that to, because the stories in it, like I had to put it down a few times and like take a break, because it's trauma related. And some of the stories with kids in there just like boil my blood too much. I had to take a break. But but understanding the concepts of that book as a therapist should almost be mandatory. It's fantastic. And then outside of that, just a book I give to everybody is Man's Search for Meaning.
Meaning?
Oh my God. So Man's Search for Meaning, imagine this story. So a guy wrote a book. So he was a psychologist, and he was in a part of Germany that was very progressive for psychology. And he's Jewish, and war breaks out. He finds himself in Auschwitz. And so he's telling you the psychology of what he learns being in Auschwitz, both from observing the Nazis and also observing Jews in this high stress situation. And it's really good. It's crazy, crazy good book.
That sounds interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really cool. Well, Ryan, tell everybody where you're located, how can they can find you if they have any more questions or just want to pick your brain.
You know, the best way to probably reach me, honestly, is going to be Instagram. I do so much. It's just easy to communicate through there. So my handle there, the best one is Ryan, R-Y-A-N, and then Esdor. It's a good German name, E-S-D-O-H-R. That's probably the best way to reach me. And then my spot's Superhuman Lab. And we have a lot of fun out there.
Is there an Instagram handle for Superhuman Lab?
Yep. I got all of them. It's just Superhuman Lab for that one too. Yep.
Very cool stuff. Superhuman Lab, if you're in the Des Moines, Urbandale area, is honestly, outside of Ryan's amazing knowledge and experience, it's just a cool facility too. It's just a really cool place to hang out. I got to teach there. It was really fun. You got one of those places where it's like, I could just hang out here all day. So, you know, a practitioner who kind of has to live out of that space, so to speak, you know, they're going to be a fun person to kind of hang out with and work with.
Well, that's the cool thing about owning a business is I get to do it my way.
Exactly.
Like, I don't do clients back to back. I don't wear shoes and socks to work hardly, because I just wear Lululemon joggers and some kind of rogue shirts like my uniform. So it's awesome. No more khaki pants and button ups for me. So it's pretty dope.
Oh, you're living a life then, right, man?
I know.
Ryan, awesome. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate you taking the time. Great conversation as always.
Anytime. Thanks, Sean.